want to kick off the show today by talking about something that certainly we were talking about a lot on this day a year ago and in the days that followed. Today marks 1 year since the Taliban seized the Afghan capital of Kabul. You'll remember how fast that takeover happened, the desperate attempts of people trying to flee the country, people holding on to airplanes as they were taking off. Just some horrific images that we saw over the over those weeks. Now, today, here at home, the federal Liberals being criticized again for bringing in just over 17,000 refugees from Afghanistan over the past year. The work continues mostly by private organizations to rescue Afghan refugees who worked with the Canadian forces. The federal government saying getting people out of the country into Canada has been very challenging since Ottawa has no diplomatic presence there and does not recognize the Taliban government. Dr. Christian Luprecht is a professor of political studies at the Royal Military College of Canada and Queen's University. He's an expert on security and defense. Dr. Luprecht, welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon, Jaylen.
It was a year ago we were watching this unfold, and I think it was, you know, only weeks prior to that that the U.S. president said, you know, it wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen. The Taliban wouldn't take control of the country once again. Here we are a year on. Where's your head at when you're looking at the state of that country right now?
Yeah, I mean, all the intelligence reports had said that this was going to be an end with horror. And I guess the Biden administration chose an end with horror rather than a horror without end. And I guess that's how they looked at their fate. Clearly, I mean, what we've seen over the last year is that the Taliban continue to struggle to establish themselves. They want to be seen as recognized as the international governing authority, but there's still very little recognition for them. That can be seen in the fact that much of the development aid for Afghanistan has not been released. Afghan foreign reserves, and of course, it doesn't help that the Taliban continue to be duplicitous. Mm-hmm. Whether that's with regards to sending women to school, or whether it's regards to al-Zawahiri hiding out in sort of the posh luxury former embassy quarter in a house owned by the Haqqani network, that is a major, if you want, quasi coalition partner in the Taliban government. I think and the people who are ultimately bearing the price for that are the local Afghans, and I think there's a lot of them who are losing real hope.
Dr. Luprecht, you touched on women and children and the plight that they are facing in that country. We know that when the Taliban took over, it kind of pitched itself as a reformed group last year, that they had changed their ways, and I don't think anyone bought into that, and if they did, I would suspect we could call them easily fools. They have proven to be anything but a reformed group.
Yeah, I think it's like all things in politics, it's complicated. There's a number of folks who are fairly progressive. I think, relatively, we're talking about the Taliban here, but especially on the issue of women. But what they've essentially instituted is sort of your classic religious theocratic regime, where there are government decisions that are being made in Kabul, but then there's the religious shura that is in part made up of some folks who are very, very conservative and who would like to take that basically return to sort of the 1996 takeover of the Taliban of Afghanistan, and no movies, no music, and so forth. And so that shura holds basically a veto power, so the government in Kabul can decide whatever it wants if the shura is not on side. And the women, the issue of sending girls and women to school is a classic example. So that there's a struggle within the Taliban ranks against the people who've declared themselves basically the supreme religious authority, regardless of what government compromises can be forged in Kabul. And that, of course, makes it very difficult to recognize the government in Kabul, because effectively they're not the real ruling power. The shura continues to be the real ruling power.
We know that the majority of the country is facing hunger. There's a real humanitarian crisis, you know, the hunger, the economy is an absolute mess. Can there be any optimism at this point about the future of Afghanistan?
Well, I think if you look at Afghans, you know, they were hopeful, I think, after the Russian invaders were kicked out and the Mujahideen took over. They were hopeful after the Taliban took over. They were hopeful again after Western coalition forces came in 2001, 2002. But I think over the last 10 years, people have had sort of started to lose hope. And I think you can get a real sense of sort of hopelessness, that people just don't see a future. And you can see that in the fact that anybody who could effectively got out when it became clear that the Taliban were going to take over. And of course, the Taliban were biding their time, knowing that, as Western powers have for over 200 years, they show up and then eventually they lose patience and then they go home. And so the challenge here, I think, is that the much of the skill set, so it's not just the economy, but much of the high-end skill set are the people who got out and who left. So the Taliban are also left with relatively little of sort of the skill set they would need to get the country running again and to get the economy running.
So what does the rest of the world at this point do about this country? I mean, when the Americans left and the other countries left, kind of washing their hands of Afghanistan, but we're seeing, you know, this humanitarian crisis. We are seeing rights again, women's and girls' rights. We're seeing people being killed. Does the rest of the world now just turn a blind eye to what's happening there?
Well, clearly we can see the rest of the world is not turning a blind eye, because we saw that the Americans, with their over-the-horizon strategy, are still able to carry out their decapitation strikes. So that was a clear message to the Taliban that the Americans might not be on the ground, but they still have a very long arm to be able to reach and assert their interests. The challenge here, I think, is that over the last 30 years, we've had huge hubris in the West about intervening in all sorts of places in the pretense of somehow thinking we can make it a better place, and I think ignoring much of the reality on the ground. And I think one of the lessons that we need to take away from the last 30 years is that ultimately I think we need to be more respectful of people's sovereignty, and that we ultimately need to let local people sort out their own problems, and if or when they are ready, they can come and they can ask for our help. But I think forcing our help upon them has not proven a recipe for success over the last 30 years.
Before I let you go, Dr. Lou Pracht, I mean, Canada's role, especially over you know, the past year, has been trying to get folks out of Afghanistan, especially those who helped the Canadian Armed Forces during the years that the CAF was in Afghanistan. Coming under fire today, once again, House of Commons saying not enough has been done, and there's a lot of folks saying the same thing. We know there's a lot of private organizations who are still working very hard to get those people out of Afghanistan. What more should Canada be doing at this point?
The tragedy is that we had 20 years to develop a policy, and governments on both sides of the aisle basically ignored the issue. This is terrible for Canada's credibility, because when we go somewhere else now, we always have to count on locals for mission success and to support our mission. And so which local is going to sign up somewhere else in the world now to support us if they know that they are ultimately going to be left in the lurch when the Canadians go home, and they're going to be left to fend for themselves against some adversarial regime that's, you know, at best going to imprison them and at worst torture or kill them and their family. And so I think there's a huge liability, not just a moral liability, but a very clear sort of a liability in terms of national interest. And we need a policy going forward, because there's so many other places in the world where you have locals working for us. And it looks like we've learned very little. I mean, the recent reporting out of the embassy in Ukraine, where we didn't share vital intelligence that could have endangered the lives of local employees, it appears, suggests that that we're still sort of building the plane while flying it. And I think after 20 years of this experience, that's simply inexcusable.
Dr. Lou Pracht, we'll leave it there this afternoon. Thank you for your time, as always.
It's been my pleasure, Jaylen. Thank you.
Yeah, take care. And Dr. Christian Lou Pracht, Professor of Poli-Sci at the Royal Military College of Canada, Queen's University. He's an expert on security and defense. I like what he said there. Well, I'm not sure I liked what he said. I think it described the situation rather well, that we were building the plane while we were flying it. I think that sums things up very well. But the work continues. We know we've had folks on from Amon Laura telling us about the work that they are doing, continuing to do, to try to get those fixers, those folks that helped Canadian forces in Afghanistan out. We know that there's about 8,000 veteran-led aid groups warning that about 8,000 Afghanis approved to come to Canada have not been able to escape. Another 3,000 who helped the Canadian Armed Forces and the government have not been approved yet to come to Canada. I've told you about the Safi family on this show. It was December 17th of last year. Actually, I think it was a couple days afterwards when we aired the interview with local man Spencer Seeker and his work to try to get that family out. Well, they're still stuck overseas. The paperwork's just finally getting done now. It's a very, very slow process. Much different than we're seeing with some other people. You take a look at the Ukrainians who've been coming to this country. Very different in many cases. And I get that there's a lot of different moving parts in both cases, but it is very staggering to see just how slow the process has been to try to get people from Afghanistan to this country. 780-496-0063. You're listening to 630 Chet Afternoons. My name is Jalen Nye.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
Three nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.